We'll call the meeting of the House Resources Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is now 1:02 p.m., Monday, April 12, 2021. We have a quorum with us with Representative McKay, Representative Fields, Representative Kronk, Vice Chair Hopkins, Representative Shragi, Representative Gillum, Representative Hannon, Representative Rauscher, and myself, Representative Putkadup. I'd like to say thank you to our recording secretary on the airwaves, Robin, and welcome our new LIO moderator. I think the first time this committee's had her with us, Kelsey. I'd also like to recognize Senator Stevens there in the audience with his staff member, Tim, I believe Weston with the UA system, and Buddy's here also. First thing on today's agenda is Senate Joint Resolution number 8, completion of the university land grant, and then we'll also be hearing House Bill 156 for the second time. With that, we did not receive any amendments from the committee in regards to Senate Joint Resolution 8. Do members have any questions for Senator Stevens or Tim today? Got an easy one today. Senator Stevens, you're more than welcome to make any closing comments before we move the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I asked him to come up here with me. I really appreciate it. Senator Gary Stevens, Kodiak. You know, I was just thinking, this is the first bill I've had in the House this year, and I've got to say, it's the strangest time I've ever experienced in my 21 years here, because usually we have time to have lunch together and get to know each other, and that just has not happened this year, and I really think it's the worst year in that case. But this bill, Mr. Chairman, it's sort of a consensus that the University of Alaska has been land deficit in its history, and in the current budget climate, I really hope the legislature can pass this bill, which will give the university a renewed opportunity to find other financial options to manage itself via its potential land holdings and to rely less on state general fund monies, which is the goal of this. Less state general fund monies and have the university pay its own way more. Resolution is a response to the request from congressional delegation who say they need our help in order to get this through Congress, and that's what this is all about. The situation has been idling for a long, long time, really decades, far too long, and hopefully this resolution will do just that. It will find some final resolution so our university can really take advantage of its land grant program. And be glad to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. And I guess just given the opportunity one last time, seeing or hearing none, what's the will of the committee? Representative Rauscher, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Senator, I was wondering, through the chair, Senator, of the monies that the state is owed by the federal government, will this add to it, or is this part of it?
This is a part of the lands that we are owed by the federal government that will reduce the general amount of lands available in other ways to the state.
Follow-up?
Representative Rauscher.
Just so I can understand it clearly, should this not pass, will the volume of land that the federal government would owe the state of Alaska change?
I don't believe so, but let me ask my staffer if he can expand on that a little bit, Tim Lamkin.
Mr. Lamkin.
For the record, Tim Lamkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, the volume that's available is fixed. This resolution comes at the request of our congressional delegation to try to finalize those lands conveyances.
Representative Rauscher, follow up.
I'm not sure I heard you, but I'm just going to say that. So, but the question is, okay, I know this is a resolution, it doesn't change anything, but should it change something later on in Congress, will that add to the amount of land that we are owed by the federal government, or will it not? If it wasn't to pass, would it affect the number of acres of land that we are owed by the federal government?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, there's a couple different questions in there maybe, but again, it being a resolution, it's intended to give our delegation a tool to help finalize that process. Now, we do have Mr. Fogles online to answer a question if we want to get into details like that. But it is a fairly complex and convoluted issue that's gone on for decades.
And before we give the floor to Mr. Fogle, I guess in conversation and discussion in regards to this resolution, it's been my understanding that we're just asking them to pay an invoice, not necessarily invoicing them again. I guess if that helps clear things up. Mr. Fogles.
Yes, Mr. Chair, can everyone hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you fine.
Okay, yeah, for the record, my name is Ed Fogles. I'm representing the University of Alaska. And to answer your question, Representative Rauscher, through the chair, it's no. This effort will not change the amount of land that the state is still owed by the federal government. All it does is shave off some of that land that will be coming to the state and give it to the university. But the sum total will remain unchanged regardless of whether this effort is successful or not.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the way you answered that. Answered my question completely. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fogles and Representative Rauscher. Any other questions for the resolution sponsor by committee members? Seeing or hearing none. Senator Stevens, if there's anything else you'd like to say before we move on, you're more than welcome to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate you hearing the bill today. Thanks.
Thank you very much. With that, Mr. Vice Chairman, what's the will of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Joint Resolution 8, Work Order 32-LS0420/I, from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Seeing or hearing no objection, Senate Joint Resolution 8 moves from the committee. We're going to take a brief at ease and get the committee report signed, and then we'll come back in for House Bill 156. We'll come back on the record. Next, we've got House Bill 156, sponsored by Representative Hopkins. We received one amendment. It's before you labeled Amendment Number 1. Representative Hannon, would you please move Amendment Number 1?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt Amendment 1 to House Bill 156, Work Order 32-LS0741/A.1.
Object for the purposes of discussion.
We've got an objection. Thank you, Representative Hannon. Representative Shragi, if you'd like to speak to your objection, or we can give the floor to Representative Hopkins.
I would appreciate a walkthrough of the amendment.
Certainly. For the record, Representative Hopkins, House District 4, North Fairbanks, Esther Goldstream, Farmers Loop, Steel Creek, and Downtown Fox. So amendment number one is a friendly amendment that was offered in the Senate side to the companion legislation and was adopted. So this, we're introducing this legislation or this amendment today to make sure that the two versions of the bill move forward in similar form. So if and when they meet up on either body, they're more smooth for the tracking, because of course we do need to have the legislation passed by October of this year, meaning the end of this session, so that the Department of Natural Resources can work with the government to create the regulations for our industrial hemp program to match federal law. So what this amendment does is clarify those stop orders for bad actors. It says that the Commissioner of Natural Resources shall, and this is new, notify the Marijuana Control Board and the Department of Public Safety when they issue one of those stop orders for a bad actor. So they shall, this is also new, they shall issue a stop order for growers who are not registered with the state of Alaska under the Industrial Hemp Program, meaning you have to be able to report your hemp to make sure it's not above the 0.3% THC level. And so then if you're not registered, you'd get a stop order, and that would be referred to the Marijuana Control Board and the Department of Public Safety. If you are registered, but you're producing a plant with THC over that 1%, you shall receive a stop order. So those are two shalls. And then we create the may issue a stop order to a person registered as an industrial hemp grower who produces the plant between the 0.3 and the 1%. Then the commissioner has the leeway to be able to decide if that person's being a good actor, working with the department, trying to commingle their crop with another crop to make sure that it's underneath the 1%. Representative Shragi, I believe, had a question about that last time. This clarifies some language there on how the commissioner would have that leeway. And then on page 2, lines 1 through 9 are clarifying language for later in the bill. Same with the remainder of that page 2. That's the extent of the amendment today. And like I said, this is one that mirrors a friendly amendment that happened in Senate to make sure that everything is copacetic as it moves forward.
Thank you, Representative Hopkins. And we've got Representative Rausch, then Representative Shragi.
Thank you, Chair. I believe in the bill, and you have to correct me if I'm wrong, but through the chair to Representative Hopkins, I think in the bill it said something about a penalty that the commissioner could put on a person. Is there one in there? And am I wrong? And second off, does this relieve penalties? This just makes a stop order? Do you understand my question at all?
I believe so, Representative Rauscher, through the chair. The penalty, from my understanding, is that it's not a fine, it's a stop order that they would have. Looking in the information that I grabbed from my office, I forgot to grab a copy of the bill. Thank you, Representative Pocketock, for your trusty aide having a copy of the bill. looking through the legislation, and we also have Buddy Witt from the Senate side as well, if there's questions I can't remember. The main penalties for not being a good actor are the stop order and penalties on that grower through the Marijuana Control Board and the Department of Public Safety. Those would be the main penalties that somebody would be able to get. If they're being a bad actor, they'd lose their ability to grow hemp.
Follow-up, Representative Rosher.
Thank you again, through the chair. I was just wondering, so are there any other penalties other than a stop order in the bill that you know of?
I would like to call a lifeline and see if Buddy Witt, real fast, as I do the research through the bill, can help me answer that.
And I guess just to frame the discussion, unfortunately, Joe wasn't able to make it with us today, who would have been able to probably answer a lot of this stuff, but I believe he's recovering from something. But anyway, Buddy, floor is yours, Mr. Witt, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Buddy Witt, staff to Senator Hughes. Representative Rauscher, if you look in section, well, I too don't have a copy of the House version of the bill, but this is referencing to AS 0305079, production and violation. Currently, section 5 and the following section, section 6, set up a way for someone to be guilty of a violation if they fail to recondition their crop. So that is the portion of this bill. The Division of Agriculture would allow someone to recondition their crop if they test between 0.3 and 0.1 THC. And then the division has the discretion that if someone is not following their rules on that reconditioning process, or they fail to recondition at all, they would be guilty of a violation, and there would be a penalty, civil penalty associated with that. For crops being grown over 1%, you have to remember, once we get over the 1% threshold there, we're dealing in criminal law. And that is someone who is growing the definition of marijuana, and we already have criminal law set up to deal with that. This is simply trying to find and identify good actors, allowing a way for good actors to repair themselves if they go over that 0.3%, and then identifying bad actors and stopping them from doing what they're doing.
Follow-up, Representative Rocha.
Thank you. And speaking in favor of this bill, okay, I just want some understanding. Has the stop order replaced penalties? Has it run alongside it, or is it affecting different things? I just want to understand the amendment for stop orders. That's all.
Representative Rusher, we have the Division of Agriculture online, Director Shady, and Robert Carter from Division of Ag to answer some of those questions on how that would look.
Between Shady and Carter, whoever wants to take a stab at Representative Rusher's questions, you may.
So this is Director Dave Shady, Division of Agriculture. So currently set up in law, there's a $500 civil penalty. So this, let's clarify. So the stop order is to anybody that is not registered. So that's step one. If you're not registered in the program, it's a stop order. You may not sell. And right now, through the regulations, it's a $500 per day civil penalty. Then if they are above 1%, as Mr. Witt said, that is in the marijuana territory, we notify the Marijuana Control Board. It becomes their jurisdiction for any further penalties on that. This gives us the discretion as a division, if it's between 0.3 and 1%, to work with that farm entity to recondition and get below the 0.3%. If they don't do that, then, of course, in our discretion, we can give them a stop order and or a civil penalty as well. So this is... the penalty is in addition to the stop order.
Thank you for that, Director Shady. Representative Rauscher.
And thank you very much. I appreciate the clarification, and thank you all.
Thank you, Representative Rauscher. Representative Shragi?
Yeah, my question was simply, does the program already require that folks that want to grow hemp register with the program? We're not creating some new standard. There's not going to be anyone that's caught off guard and realizes all of a sudden that they have to register and have a stop order issued. Is that correct?
Representative Shragi, through the chair, we have the pilot program in place now, but the pilot program would be going away, so they would have to re-register with the state as a grower in order to be compliant with the law.
Follow-up,
Representative Shragi.
Does the pilot program require registration with that program?
I'm not familiar with the pilot program. I'd like to punt that to the Division of Agriculture as well.
Mr. Carter or Mr. Shady?
This is Director Shady. So under federal law, all producers of industrial hemp have to be registered either by a state program or under the USDA program. So it is under federal law required. Right now in Alaska, you have to either be registered in the pilot program or you have to be under the USDA's program, and I don't believe anybody in the state has registered through the USDA. So all producers, and in Alaska, we've also added manufacturers and retail stores. So anybody that is working within the confines of industrial hemp are required to be registered. We will transition from the pilot program for these folks right into the permanent program. So with the transition language, we'll just switch over. Those are January two December registrations that we have, and we would just roll them over into next year into the permanent program.
Thank you, Director Shady, Representative Shragi. Does that suffice?
Sounds more or less like the status quo, and I'm comfortable withdrawing my objection.
And I'll continue to object for discussion purposes. Representative Gillum.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. My only question here is on page 2, line 13, 14, and 15, it says, regulate the farming of elk in a manner similar to the manner in which the commissioner regulates domestic animals and livestock to the extent that is appropriate. Why would there be a regulation on elk in a hemp-growing bill?
Representative Gillum through the chair. Representative Cronk asked that exact same question last hearing. Because of the legislative drafting manual and legislative drafting style, you amend the entire section of the statute, and so you can see new language in a bill is new, is underlined and bold. Deleted is bracketed and capitalized. You see that at the bottom of every page. So the only new language that's being added on in section 1 is page 2, line 30 and 31, and line 3, 1 through 3. The manner of elk is just because it's within the Division of Ag and the same farming general section of statute. It's not adding or doing anything with elk, just adding that language at the bottom.
Okay, thanks. I apologize. I missed it last time when it was in committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Gillum and Representative Hopkins. Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I was just wondering, with a $500 a day penalty, is there any reason that a person would take more than a couple days or a couple weeks to fulfill their commitment to get beyond the $500 a day penalty? Or could this end up to be tens of thousands of dollars just to comply with regulations, if you understand what I'm saying?
Representative Rauscher through the chair. With the language giving the Commissioner of Natural Resources the leeway to work with people being good actors, that penalty would not go in place until the Commissioner deems that person to be a bad actor and not trying to solve their problem, but trying to skirt the law and be more of a marijuana grower than a hemp grower.
I thank you. Appreciate it.
Bad faith, good faith effort, I think, is the differentiating thing there. Any other questions from committee members on Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 156? Seeing or hearing none, I'll remove my objection. We've got a motion to adopt Amendment Number 1. Any other objections? Seeing or hearing none, Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. Back to the main bill. Do we have any members in general questioning in regards to House Bill 156 before we, Representative Hannon?
Thank you. And if I could, Mr. Chairman, I guess my question is for Mr. Shady while we're on the topic. And I just want to underscore that I am in complete support of House Bill, the House Bill 156 before us is amended, and in no way are my comments to dissuade from it. But I have heard from a couple of people who ask, because this is about the commercial industrial hemp. When we get to the point where we have a state red program, will individual Alaskans who would like to grow industrial hemp for their own agricultural use feed crop rotation, et cetera, without commercial registration? At what point in that state program is that allowed, or is it? I know individuals can grow their own cannabis for their own personal consumption, as long as they're not selling it. But it's unclear as to whether with industrial hemp, whether we ever get there for individuals who don't want to sell it to be able to use it for their own agricultural purposes.
Not- I think with consent of from the bill sponsor, I'll kick that over to Mr. Shady or Mr. Carter.
Yeah, Representative Hannon through the chair, this is Director Shady. So industrial hemp, as I said earlier, is required to be managed, all of those plants under federal law. So there is no personal exemption. If somebody wants to grow cannabis and is not defining it as industrial hemp, then they can do that under the cannabis laws of the state of Alaska. But for anybody to use, grow, manufacture, or sell, and I said go, use, manufacture, or sell, they need to be registered in our program. And that's why we have tried to keep the fees very low. So even the retail fee for a year is only $400. So We've tried to keep that to where it works for folks. There really is no reason to grow very small amounts of industrial hemp. So if in the future there would be some need for a small use exemption, that's something I'm sure the department can look at. But right now, if you're going to grow industrial hemp, you have to be registered.
Thank you, Mr. Shady. Follow-up, Representative Hannon.
Follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Shady, the registration fee is $400. Could you tell me what the testing fee is?
Well, it Representative Hannon, through the chair, Director Shady again. So it depends on whether this is going to be used for consumption, animal or human, that those products are required to be tested. If you're just using it for clothing and that, it's not required to be tested. So it depends on the use, what those fees for testing are. If it's going to be for human consumption, those fees to test can be in the hundreds of dollars. And so we have worked with industry to do it in batches so that you're not doing individuals, but you're doing larger groups, which keep it in a reasonable amount. So it really depends on the purpose. The testing for fiber, of course, for clothes, we only require to make sure that the THC content is within the realm of industrial hemp. So it depends on that product and what the use is going to be. The intense testing is when it's going to be for consumption, especially around cannabinoids and other products that will be used for human consumption.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shady, and thank you, Representative Haddon. I think with the efforts from Representative Hopkins to avoid the sentence setting, along the same lines, I'm interested as far as small use, if future legislation can be introduced to kind of highlight that sector of the industry. With that, Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Mr. Shea there, this is just a question. I had heard that if you had a large pod crop somewhere near an area, and you were to plant a hemp crop next door, the bees would cross-pollinate and basically turn the cannabis into hemp. Is this a true statement, and do you know whether that's true?
That's more of an Representative Rauscher, through the chair. Mr. Chairman, I would like Rob Carter to answer that. I can in general terms, but Rob has a very good detailed explanation.
Thank you, Mr. Shady. Mr. Carter?
For the record, this is Rob Carter, through the chair, Representative Rauscher. You are actually partially correct. Cannabis is generally wind-pollinated. The pollen can blow a significant distance. In our regulations, we do have isolation distances set to protect one cannabis producer from another, since we do have a legal avenue for interested parties to register and grow recreational side of cannabis. If one was to plant an industrial hemp crop that was grown as a grain or for biomass, where it had both male and female plants, and that pollen was transferred to, let's say, a recreational cannabis grow, that in turn wouldn't turn the recreational grow into quote-unquote hemp, but it would very much so reduce the quality by the generation of seed, reduce the overall cannabinoids, including THC concentrations, and could ruin the market for that recreational crop. We did account for that in our regulations, as I said, and we do have isolations distances set for individual producers that are trying to produce industrial hemp as grain or for biomass, where we know that they're going to have both male and female plants in that field. We then evaluate through resources at AMCO if there's registered recreational cannabis grows, just so we're not impacting another business's opportunity to generate revenue.
Thank you, Mr. Carter. Follow-up, Representative Rauscher.
Thank you. Is there is the calculated distance calculated by the size of each farm or the size of one of the farms? How do you calculate the distance, and is there a formula for that?
For the record, this is Rob Carter, the Division of Ag. Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, it's actually just, it's not based on the size of the farm, it's just pollen in general. The size of the cannabis pollen, the distribution studies done specifically in Canada with their extremely large industrial hemp industry has really pushed the industry to understand that on the windiest of windy days in Delta, Alaska, or here in Palmer, cannabis pollen could travel 3,000 meters.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Representative Rauscher and Mr. Carter and Mr. Shady. Do we have any other questions from committee members? Seeing or hearing none, what is the will of the committee? Mr. Vice Chairman.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 156 as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
And I'll object just because I didn't give you the opportunity to provide closing comments if you'd like.
No, Representative, Mr. Chair, just wanted to thank the committee for their good questions and dialogue, making sure we had a good feel for the bill as we move it along for rapid growth.
Thank you, Representative Hopkins. I remove my objection. Are there any other further objection from committee members? Seeing or hearing none, House Bill 156 moves from committee. We are on a roll with short meetings. We're going to be closing up. I'd just like to remind folks of this coming Wednesday's meeting. We're going to take up House Bill 26, and that's the conflict of interest between the Board and Fish, Board and Game. And then we'll also take up HB 98, Biffs and Flops, in regards to the forestry industry. We'll plan to bring up 98 to have continued committee discussion, and then hear amendments on 98 next week, if we can. If you'd like to, it's my understanding that DNR has made effort to make the rounds with committee members based on the very detailed discussions that we had on both two previous hearings of HB 98. So if there are further detailed questions that you'd like to reach out to DNR with, or you'd like us to ask DNR to reach out to you to help answer some of that before we get on the record on Wednesday, you're more than welcome to. With that, the House Resources Committee will stand adjourned until Wednesday, and we're adjourned at 1:35 p.m.